Hi, this is Ruth McCauley with news from the Decatur area for Thursday, November 3rd. We begin with some items other than the Cubs win on the front page of the Herald and Review. We begin with an article written by Justin Kahn, Park District Approves Nelson Water Park. The Decatur Park District made it official on Wednesday. There will be a new water park at Nelson Park set to open in 2018. Exactly what will be in that water park is still up for discussion. The unanimous vote from the park board on Wednesday's meeting was specifically to, quote, approve the third of three Decatur Aquatics concepts and direct staff to enter into contracts with the engineer and begin the design and licensing phase, end quote, according to Park District Attorney Ed Flynn. That proposal, presented by aquatics consulting firm Councilman Hunsaker, was the $9.2 million Overlook Adventure Aquatics Park. The board will approve final design plans and construction contracts after more discussion. The park district will run the Fairview Park pool for the 2017 season, then plans to close it and open the new Nelson Park location in May 2018. Eventually, the Fairview pool will be demolished and the area repurposed. For the park district, it's been a long journey to this point. The lakefront development project was first hatched in 2008, and a water park was first mentioned publicly in 2010. That's been one of those issues that reaches back a number of years where it's been on the master plan, and we've always tried to keep the needle moving forward with it, Park District Executive Director Bill Clevenger said. I think the district recognized the need to keep the community moving forward with amenities that people who live here are going to be interested in using, and people considering relocation here are going to be interested in. It's another piece in making Decatur a great place for families to live. The water park will be funded by a $10.7 million alternate revenue bond to be repaid over 20 years. Park District Chief Financial Officer Rodney Burr said it's in the district's budget to repay the bond without cutting out other park improvements or, most importantly, raising the tax levy. The district raised its rate to $1.15 per $100 of equalized assessed valuation, EAV, last year. EAV is a third of the property's value minus exemptions. For a $50,000 home, the average tax bill would be $122.52. Burr said despite $100 million in lost revenue because of sinking property values from 2012 to 2014, the district has raised its rate just 16 cents in the last 20 years and could, without a referendum, raise its rate 50 cents to $1.65. But Burr isn't recommending an increase, and board members all said they're not interested in raising it. Past boards have worked hard to keep it down, Commissioner Jack Kenny said. The current board is going to work to keep it down, Commissioner Chris Harrison added. For the aquatics facility, the Park District considered three options presented by Councilman Hunsaker at a public information meeting on October 11th. Option one was to renovate the current pool at Fairview Park for $5.3 million, with total reconstruction delayed 15 years. Total reconstruction. I'm not sure what they mean there. Option two is to replace the Fairview pool with a $7.5 million cost. And option three was the $9.2 million Nelson Park concept located directly east of Overlook Adventure Mini Golf. In discussions by the board at the next board meeting October 12th and another special meeting October 25th, it became clear option three was the preferred choice. The Fairview location has a 25-year-old pool and a bathhouse built in 1966. Renovating it was an expensive short-term solution. Replacement at Fairview would only be $2 million less than the more expansive Nelson Park option and would be limited by available space at the Fairview Park location. There would be no room for additional amenities or parking. The Park District saw the Nelson Park Water Park option as another major attraction to add to its growing list in that area. There is already the mini golf course and will soon be a new playground, ropes course, batting cages, and the $4 million amphitheater, thanks to a donation from the Howard G. Buffett Foundation. The original Councilman Hunsicker mock-up for Option 3 included a 48 square foot leisure pool with zero depth beach entry and children's play structure, tot features, two water slides, and a crossing activity. A 3,150 square foot six lane 25 yard lap pool with zip line and 2 1-meter diving boards, and a 1,693 square foot plunge pool with bowl side, drop slide, climbing wall, and rope swing. Wow. Commissioners were quick to point out that the mock-up wasn't the final design. Clevenger said the district would begin conversations with Councilman Hunsicker on creating a design proposal. It would then be tweaked based on feedback from the commissioners before formal approval, followed by the bidding process. Clevenger said the planning process would last 4 to 5 months, with late April or early May as the start date for construction. That's why it was important to keep the process moving along if we wanted to have it ready for 2018, Clevenger said. Commissioner Stacey Young voted in favor of moving forward with the project, but said she'd like to see it done in phases. Pardon me. The other commissioners, though, felt it made more sense to fund and build it now to avoid construction cost inflation, higher interest rates, and the costs associated with adding on to recent construction. Commissioner Chris Riley said he felt the park would have more impact as a finished product. In addition to approving the Aquatic Center, the board approved the 10-year capital plan and fees for 2017. There were no major changes in fees, though there were 25-cent increases for the zoo carousel and train rides, Decatur Indoor Sports Center daily passes, and daily Fairview pool admission. Burr also discussed the tax levy with the board, with a vote coming at the November 16th meeting. Burr recommended to keep the rate the same at $1.15, with an expected levy of $9,602,543. He said the Macon County estimating a 2.5% increase in He said, with Macon County estimating a 2.5% increase in property values, the Park District would collect an additional $235,023 compared to last year. Property values increased 0.42% last year after 3 straight years of decline. We turn inside the Decatur Herald and Review and pick up some articles there, beginning with one written by Justin Kahn. Middleton sets up for DMH Auxiliary Craft and Bake Sale. For 16 years, Sharon Middleton has served as a volunteer for the Decatur Memorial Hospital Auxiliary and baked for the annual DMH Auxiliary Craft and Bake Sale. Middleton has been a decorative painter for 40 years, owning her own shop and showing at hundreds of craft shows. But until last year, she could never secure a spot in the craft show, even the year she served as auxiliary president. You think I'd have some pull, but we don't get dibs just because we're auxiliary members, Middleton said, laughing. It books up fast. There are so many that come each year, but finally someone dropped out and I was able to get in. This year, for the second straight year, Middleton will be among the 35 artisans featured at the annual DMH Auxiliary Craft and Bake Sale from 9 a.m. to 4 p.m. Friday. Whoa, that's tomorrow. Craft vendors will be selling homemade items in the classrooms next to Barnes Lobby off the Union Street entrance. There are some one-of-a-kind treasures. It's a great way to kick off Christmas shopping, said craft sale director Susie Morrow, an auxiliary member who has been involved with the event for more than 15 years. In Barnes Lobby, the bake sale will feature items baked by auxiliary members, several tables of breads, cakes, pies, cookies, and other goodies, including Middleton's apple pie bread and candy. Apple pie bread. And candy. The event is one of several fundraising efforts the DMH Auxiliary puts on every year to raise money to purchase items for a variety of departments, equipment that otherwise DMH would not be able to buy. Among the 35 artisans are Middleton, Lori Query, Teresa Sakimi, Lori Brown, Terry Beer, and Luann Darabin. Morrow said vendors are switched up every year to keep things fresh. We have some vendors who have been there a number of years because they have items that are popular, said Morrow, who is also a crafter. But we also have a certain amount of turnover, which I like to have. People get tired of the same stuff. This year, more than a third are new, which is really good. It's a good mix of what people have come to expect, but also new things, so it's not boring. Middleton began crafting when her son was 1 year old. He's now 41. Along the way, she learned how to paint, opened a craft store with her mom, and even taught decorative painting for several years. Now, she still does a few craft shows a year. She also does the Apple and Pork Festival in Clinton, held annually in late September, and at Christmas on Vinegar Hill in Mount Pulaski, Saturday, November 19th. I used to do 10 or 12 shows a year, but I'm getting too old for that, Middleton said, laughing. But we have people who come back to see us each year, and occasionally I'll still see someone who will say, "You taught me to paint." I especially like it if they've stuck with it and they're still painting. Middleton's inventory includes ornaments, decorations, jewelry, and cookie jars, all hand painted, with many of the pieces cut by her husband Clarence and his jigsaw table. If you go, of course, you know it's at the Barnes Lobby and the DMH classrooms adjacent to the lobby from 9 to 4 p.m. tomorrow, November. Oh, wait a minute. It says Friday, November 6th. That can't be right, can it? If today's only the 3rd, they must mean the 4th. Sorry about that misprint there that I fell right into. The cost is free, but the items available include soft sculpture art, turned wood items, hand-thrown pottery, American Girl dog clothing, baby items, kitchen items, jewelry, paper items, excuse me, including cards and gift card assortments, T-shirts, scarves, ribbon necklaces, photo memo boards, personalized children's books, gloves, hats, dog coats, purses, ornaments, hand-painted decorations, florals, handmade soaps, soy candles, polymer clay figures, and wooden yard decorations. And here's a quick item about the storm last night. A fast-moving storm downs power lines and tree limbs. A fast-moving storm Wednesday evening kept fire and police crews busy as it barreled through central Illinois, toppling trees, ripping off branches, and downing power lines. A power pole fell and hit cars in the parking lot of the Kroger store at 255 West 1st Drive in the South Shores area of Decatur at 5:49 p.m. And a short time later, firefighters were called to a shed fire in the 2800 block of North Martin Luther King Jr. Drive. It's believed the blaze, which was contained quickly, was sparked by a lightning strike. Macon County Sheriff's Office reported a tree down in Forsyth, and the porch roof was blown off a home in a mobile home park in Maroa. The county's warning sirens were activated for tornado warnings as the storm rushed through at about 6 p.m. The National Weather Service reported a funnel cloud south of Latham and low rotation later near Harristown and Warrensburg. No touchdowns were reported. Battalion Chief Todd McKenzie with the Decatur Fire Department said calls for storm-related damage were minor in nature, but there were a lot of them. At one point, we only had one company available because everybody was tied up with everything else, he said. That's what happens when storms roll through and your resources are tapped out. You just try to muddle through. We turn now to a couple crimes and courts articles, both, I think, written by Huey Freeman, the crime reporter for the Decatur Herald and Review. Parolee slashes man's face and chest during a $10 robbery. Oh, dear. Robert L. Howell Jr., a 54-year-old Decatur man with an extensive criminal history, is being held without bond on charges of armed robbery and aggravated battery with a deadly weapon for allegedly slashing a man in his face and chest with a knife during a robbery. The victim, a 41-year-old man, told police he was walking in the vicinity of North Hilton Street and East Prairie Avenue when a man who he knew by the name of Lil Bob approached him and asked him for $10 as he, quote, presented a silver switchblade-style knife, end quote, said a probable cause affidavit by Decatur Patrol Officer Ryan Wicks. The victim offered a $10 bill to him, but Lil Bob demanded more money. When the victim refused to give him more, Lil Bob, quote, then slashed him in the face and the right side of his chest with a switchblade, end quote, Wicks wrote in his statement. When the police arrived on the scene, the victim was no longer in the vicinity. The officer spoke with a man who had reported the incident to police, who helped them to locate the victim. He said he saw the victim walking southbound on Hilton, just north of Wood Street, which turned out to be in the direction of the victim's house. Officers followed a blood trail toward the victim's house, which led through the back porch into his residence on East Wood Street. When the victim said Lil Bob was the one who stabbed him, the witness said his real name is Robert Howell. The victim viewed a police photo lineup with six images, in which he identified the picture of Howell as the man who robbed and stabbed him. Howell was apprehended October 17th by special... Well, no, holy cow. We don't know when this happened. I guess I assumed it was, within the last 24 hours. But it says that Howell was apprehended October 17th by Special Deputy U.S. Marshal Lauren Sturdivant and booked in the Macon County Jail, where he is being held without bond. He was arraigned October 21st on a Class X count of armed robbery with a dangerous weapon, punishable by 21 to 45 years in prison, and one count of aggravated battery with a deadly weapon, carrying a 2 to 5 year sentence. He entered a plea of not guilty Wednesday and was assigned an attorney from the Macon County Public Defender's Office. Howell has 10 felony convictions for crimes he committed between 1989 and 2012, including robbery, aggravated battery, great bodily harm, domestic battery and bodily harm, and narcotics possession. He has served 9 terms in the Illinois Department of Corrections, in addition to numerous jail terms for misdemeanor convictions. He was due back in court for a pretrial hearing on November 21st. And our next crime and courts report, which I hope is a little more clearly written by Huey Freeman, is Woman Mugged Walking Along West Side Street. A 55-year-old Decatur woman was walking along a street on the city's west side at about 10:15 p.m. October 7th when she was struck from behind and knocked to the sidewalk. The assailant then beat her up and punched her in the head, said a probable cause affidavit by Decatur Patrol Officer Christopher Eads. While the woman was on the ground, the man who battered her reached into her pocket and removed her money, she later told police. The robber took about $15 from the victim. Oh, this is a sorry state of affairs. Pardon me for the editorial. The woman who was attacked in the 1100 block of North Wilder Avenue recognized the suspect as someone she knew by the first name, Steve, with a possible surname of Brady. When police showed the victim a photo lineup with 6 photos, including one of Stephen J. Brady, she identified Brady as the man who battered and robbed her. The victim suffered bruising and swelling to the left side of her face near her eye. Brady, 43, was arrested October 23rd and booked into the Macon County Jail, where he is being held on a $20,000 bond. Felony charges of robbery and aggravated battery were filed Tuesday against Brady in Macon County Circuit Court. Robbery is a Class 2 felony punishable by 3 to 7 years in prison. Aggravated battery is a Class 3 felony carrying a possible sentence of 2 to 5 years if there is a conviction. He is due in court for his arraignment November 14th. Brady has no criminal history, according to his pretrial bond report. I'm turning now to the Decatur Tribune and picking up a couple of items on their front page today. First, over 500 votes cast early at Macon County Clerk's office for second straight day. The Macon County Clerk, Steve Bean, reported that Tuesday was the second straight day that over 500 early and grace period ballots were cast in his office. The Macon County Clerk's office hours for early and grace period voting are Wednesday to Friday, 8:30 a.m. to 7 p.m., Saturday and Sunday, 9 a.m. to 4 p.m., Monday, 8:30 a.m. to 7 p.m. Election day, the polls are open 6 a.m. to 7 p.m. Grace period voter registration and voting continues through election day. Thursday, that's today, is the last day the clerk's office will accept requests for applications for absentee ballots to be mailed out. Mail absentee ballots must be postmarked by 11:59 p.m. on November 8th. Call 424-1333 for more election information. Oh, and then here's an item that makes everybody unhappy. The Macon County Sheriff's Office is currently investigating a report of suspicious pill-like items found in candy packages that were handed out during trick-or-treating in the Macon area. This report was just received by the Sheriff's Office, and the information is limited at this time. They are not releasing any additional information due to the incident currently being under investigation. The sheriff's office is urging parents to examine all of their child's candy prior to them consuming the candy or other food products they received, regardless of where they received the candy. If any suspicious items are located, contact with the items and packaging should be limited, and the items should be given to a local law enforcement agency for further investigation. And we're also going to pick up the first item listed or addressed in Paul Osborne's City Beat column. Many thanks to Howard Buffett for a great October in the Decatur area. Howard Buffett, who has become somewhat the patron saint of Decatur, was a major part of October being one of the best months for our community in a long time. It was like Santa arrived early with great gifts for our city. Last week, it was announced the Howard G. Buffett Foundation is funding a new $15 million police training center on the city's south side. The facility will be used to instruct new recruits from throughout Illinois. In addition, it will also provide advanced training for police chiefs and command officers. Considering the amount of activity that will be taking place in that area and the number of people that will be part of that complex on a continuing basis, the ripple effect from the project and the Buffett donation could result in more food and retail businesses on the South Shores area. Buffett's donations earlier in the month, including $3.9 million for a new amphitheater and other donations for projects benefiting the Children's Museum of Illinois and Scoville Zoo, have sure given Decatur a lot more to be thankful about. We already have a lot. And an early Christmas with a lot of good projects under the Christmas tree. Thank you, Howard Buffett, for believing in our future and working with so many of our leaders to create a lot of good news to report. Some of the local briefs today, Thursday, November 3rd. The Wednesday night meeting of the Decatur Township Board was canceled due to a lack of quorum. They were all watching the World Series. It doesn't say that here, but I suspect. The board had been set to appoint a replacement to fill the seat left vacant with last month's resignation of trustee Susan Gant Reynolds. The board's next meeting is scheduled for 6 p.m. Wednesday, November 9th. City Council candidates' nominating petitions can be filed in the office of the city clerk on the second floor of the Decatur Civic Center, 1 Gary K. Anderson Plaza. Filing begins at 8 a.m. Monday, November 21st, and goes through 5 p.m. Monday, November 28th. Applications for Thanksgiving baskets will be taken from 1 to 3:30 p.m. Monday, November 7th, and 9 a.m. to noon on Tuesday, November 8th, at the Salvation Army Social Services Office at 110 South Church Street. Let me read that again. Applications for Thanksgiving baskets will be taken from 1 to 3:30 p.m. on Monday, November 7th, and from 9 a.m. to noon on Tuesday, November 8th, at the Salvation Army offices at 110 South Church Street. Successful applicants will have at least two people in the household and bring a social security card for each person, picture ID for all adults, and a medical card or birth certificate for all children. Wow. Yep, so we're now moving on toward Thanksgiving. It's time for us to take a quick break. Hope you can hang on with us and come back for the second half hour of news from the Decatur area in just a moment.